I don't know if everybody has read this, but this panel will take place in English since we have English-speaking participants on the panel, namely Elder Astursson from Kokkojokken, Iceland. We have Lee Lugebo from Dansk Artistforbund, Danish Artists Union. Are there any in the audience that only speak English, or is everybody Danish, Swedish talking? What is the share? Who speaks only English or French or whatever? Oh, okay, cool. Martin Trundqvist from Sweden, the Swedish model and alternative record company. Osmond Dahlén from Bandbase, alternative distributor, you might say. And Martin Gormsen from Koda, the Danish copyright union or organization. My name is Carsten Oldman. I work in radio, and I'll be moderating this panel. We're saving some time at the end for Q&A, so if you have pressing questions, please note them, and we'll take them at the end. Has everybody turned off their cell phones or turned them on to silent? Everybody ready? Okay. So what we're discussing here is the alternative distributions of music, free music. How do these things work in the future, mainly? I mean, we have this discussion for a long time, and we're trying to figure out how can this hold in the future. So to set off the discussion, I read in an article the other day that Martin Trundqvist from the Swedish model wrote. He says that I'd rather have 100,000 listeners and 100 buyers than 100 listeners and 100 buyers. It seems fairly obvious, but then again, maybe not. So Martin, would you please tell us what's behind that statement and sort of try to give the implications of how that, where that might lead us?
Sure. Good morning. To me, it's two things. For one, I mean, I love having people listening to the music that I love. That's the reason why I run a record label in the first place. So, I mean, for me, my main objective is to get the music I love into as many people's ears as possible. And the other thing is that, for me, it's a huge possibility if I have lots of listeners. And for me, it's really obvious that a record label nowadays should be working on getting people to pay, right? But at the same time, acknowledge that people have certain ways of actually listening to music. And I think it's really important to understand that when we lower the thresholds in you know which music you can listen to, you will get people to listen to your music. And so if I have the possibility nowadays to actually spread the music that I love around the world for free and get lots of listeners to it, and then maybe get some of them to pay, there's a huge possibility for me to actually make money on those listeners, because they can go to live shows, they can buy the music box that I make, which is really expensive. So when I get all those listeners, there's actually possibilities for me to convert them into consumers, if you like. To me, there's no tension between free and bought music.
But then there's the obvious argument, the people representing the artists, the composers, the musicians. We have the artist union and we have the copyright owners. But Neil, maybe if you would, what do you see in the statement that Martin puts out here?
Well, I'll say that I don't think it's far-fetched, but we still sometimes find it difficult to see that all what is free is also turned into revenue streams. We are representing a lot of Danish artists. Some of them are living very well, some of them are not living very well, and they really need all these revenue streams to make a living. And I'm not saying that free streaming, if that's what we're talking about, cannot sometimes be a good idea, but it's, we still need to build it around something. For free, for just being free, I don't really believe in, but free in communities where you might actually use some you exploit your music targeting at some people that you know you have a community with, you can build up something. That might be true, that we can actually generate something from that. But I think it's a very difficult discussion, because what is free? Is it, are we talking about Pirate Bay free, or are we talking about something very much targeted at something that we're aiming at building up in the end?
But one model of free is fan base. Osmos, if you would shortly describe your your way of free.
Yeah, Bandbase is a music community, much like MySpace. The difference is we're a local-based community, so we only exist in Denmark. We have 15,000 artist profiles, sharing around 80,000 pieces of music. The bands decide for themselves whether they want to stream or make the tracks available for download, and they can always take the tracks down whenever they want. And it's free for the users. But we have an agreement with Coda where we pay percentage of the money we make off of Bandbase. So that goes back to the artists. So you can say that's a free model, or it's a model that feels free, but it's a model that's still paid for.
But paid for by who? Where does the money come from? If the users download for free and you pay money to Coda?
What's
the money involved?
The money comes from advertising price. And sponsorships on the site. That being said, I think it's important to make a distinction between the music you could call music with a commercial potential and music that is more like amateur music, which you can compare to going to soccer practice or something like that. Music you make because it's a fun thing to do. And for the amateur music, I don't see any problem with that being free. It's a very good thing that you can spread the music through the world and engage in this culture that is spreading music. When you're dealing with the more commercial music, the big challenge seems to be when to go from giving away your music free to where you actually start charging people for your music. That's a challenge we see bands on the site dealing with every day. And often the result is that they seem to get disappointed that they're not getting as much money into their music that they would like, so they decide to put their music out for free instead. Then that's when you can talk about that might not be a good thing for the music business as a whole, that you're sort of devaluating the music because everyone else is giving it away, so we have to do that too. So I think that's sort of one of the challenges, to go from free to paid and decide when to do that.
And Martin Goldman, you've entered into the collaboration with Bandbase. What were the thoughts you had on that when you entered into the discussion about this collaboration?
Well, we had a lot of thoughts, especially because the question of free music is especially hard when it comes to new music, and especially unsigned new music. And first of all, I would like to make a point of the nature of music, because for many, many years, as long time, I know at least, there have been a discussion regarding the question, when is something promotion and when is it exploitation that should be paid for. And I'm convinced that the discussion will also continue in the future, and it also had a reason, because if you compare music to a book or a movie, then there's totally different ways how you consume different kinds of content. If you have a book or a movie, you will read the book one time and watch the movie one time, typically. Some movies, some books are read or watched several times, but typically only one time. You can say that the value for the end user is highest for the first time you consume the content. If you take music, it goes the other way around, because if you listen to music, you typically need to listen to a piece of music many times before you actually like it. And it makes a need for promotion of music. And it is also one of the reasons why it is very, very difficult to break new music. And it's also the reason why radio station only plays back catalog, and it's very, very difficult to put new music on radio. And therefore, it is simply needed to take the question of promotion seriously. And we have engaged in a lot of activities. We have engaged, for instance, in the Career Canon project today, together with Denmark Radio, to take this question seriously. But we have also engaged in the cooperation with Bandmates. And what we have decided, the way we handle the situation for Bandbase, it's a great community. A lot of our members are very fond of Bandbase, and we would like to support it. And what we have said is that normally we have a structure where we have a fee for the composers and writers based on the stream or per download. But the agreement we have made with Bandbase is an agreement where there's paid a part of the total income, but then we have set up some rules together with Bandbase. One rule is that there can only be music on Bandbase where the artist himself or herself have put it on the website. And there should be, even though the writers and composers assign their rights to Coda, that there is a need for prior approval from every artist. And it should also be a condition that the artist at any time can take down the music. And these rules secure that it is not a commercial model, and if an artist don't feel anymore that it is promotion, they can take the music down.
Eldar, having heard this, heard what Martin Gomes has said, you represent Gokuyoko, Icelandic music distributor, download service. Would you enter into a collaboration like the one you just described with a copyright organization?
Yeah, I think what is coming, like this information of what Kota is doing, trying to like make it legal to download and listen to music, because we all know that free music on the internet, it's not scarce. You can, you know, if you know your ways around the internet, you can get free music. The challenge is, in my opinion, there are two challenges. You know, to make it easy to have these services legal, and you know, we all know that the current model with copyright and the internet, you know, there are a lot of questions. You know, what is the right way? And you know, Kota would not necessarily do this deal with just anyone, but they are working with Bandbase, and hopefully the experience from that cooperation will make some kind of framework that other platforms can enter into. And the other challenge is, while there is a lot of, and you know, free music on the internet, is to make the route from the music to the wallet of the music fan as short as possible. So when you're listening to the music for free, that you can actually buy it, or as Martin was talking about, that you know, that money can be made of live shows or physical items like a vinyl or a music box, you know, because we cannot stop that music being made free on the internet. That's something that is a fact. And Gokuyoko is a platform where you can listen to all music for free. You can listen and stream music for free, but there's always a buy button to any album and any track. So the route from listening to buying is as short as possible. And our experience shows that the people who are listening the most, or listening for free on Gokuyoko, they buy the most of music. So while one can argue that person who is listening to music on Gokuyoko and is a heavy consumer listening to music many hours a week, he's getting that all for free. But the example also shows that he's buying the music that he likes. And as we see it, he's trying before he buys. He's listening to the music he likes, he buys.
So that's straight into the discussion of whether it is advertising and then buying afterwards. Martin Tankos, what does your experience tell you in this? this question. How many people actually first stream and then buy, try and buy? Is that how you put it?
I don't have the statistics, but an important thing an important argument to make here is that I, as a record label, would never exist if it weren't possible for me to distribute music for free. Because when I started, and still, have no money to invest in promotion and all of these things that we're talking about. And so all of a sudden, the music can talk for itself, and it can spread itself in a free way. And for me, that's the huge possibility of our age. It's not only free music, it's also free marketing, and it's free promotion. And for me as a creative person, having 100,000 listeners or whatever, it's a huge possibility for me to be creative about with the ways that I actually can make those people open their wallets. So, I mean, again, it's great. And it's also a great way to make amateurs, although I don't like the world, to professionals. But I also think that it's not a... to make a bold statement, if you're ready. It's not
you're
a
ready?
Right to be able to make a living out of your art. Unfortunately not. I mean, just because I say I'm a lawyer, it's not my right to be able to make a living out of that. And just because I make music, it's not my right to make a living out of it. I mean, let's face it, not everybody is great at making music. And if you make music that you need to listen to many times to like, that's not good music. I'm sorry.
Neil, you represent the ones who don't have a right to make a living out of their... creativity?
I won't particularly comment on that. We certainly represent a lot of artists that do make a living, but a lot of them are struggling. And I think what's interesting in this panel is that we are discussing now ways of getting out to the customers where you have a community, where you have an easy access to buy, you have information about the artist, and so and to services like that, I'd say yes, they are interesting because first of all, you have the right to say yes, I want to be there, and no, I don't want to be there. To me, that's very important. It might not be a right to live from your music, but you should have the right to decide whether you actually want to hand it over for free. We do respect a lot of our artists that say, you know, we are going out on bandwidth because that's a good way for us, and as long as they've thought about it and they actually see that they get something back, then I think that's fine. But here we also have the community, we have the respect for the music, whereas you have other services where people just take the music, put it out there for free, which is not right, in my opinion. And just making all music free, whether it's paid for by a third company or whoever's paying for it or maybe not paying for it, that might be a risk of devaluating the music because we might just end up, you know, having a free access to everything and not really caring about the music. And that, I think, is a pity. Why should music only be used for promoting other services?
Cosmos, are you afraid of maybe devaluating the music?
Yeah, I am. But at the same time, as I said before, I think you need to make this distinction between the music with commercial potential that Martin is talking about and sort of the amateur music or the long tail of music. Yeah, that's always a problem. But I think we agree in the panel that free is actually a good idea if it's used as a strategy for making money. But free as just being free is probably not a good idea.
Do you have a comment, Martin?
Yeah, I believe it's important to distinct between various kind of music and the way where an artist will be in his or her career. When we talk about new music, it is necessary to think of promotion. Free models will be the normal. But on the other hand, if we take a look at the back catalog, established artist. I think it's understandable that labels and other rights holders, they really want that payment should be the rule. And I think it is perfectly understandable that the reason for that, the need to create income. Last Monday, Coda organized a conference at Christiansborg in Copenhagen as well, the parliamenters, because we wanted to promote copyright vis-a-vis the parliament. And we have Simon Kvam from Nephew, who made a speech, and he was very, very clear, and he said very expressly that everybody that exploit music, they believe they do the artist a favor, and they believe somebody else is paying. But it is exactly the core of the problem, because every kind of exploitation is also a promotion, but you need to have the income from somewhere. And because of that, artists and labels and collecting societies such as Coda need for back catalog and established artists to create some kind of income for every kind of exploitation, because then together it can create an income for the artist, and it can create possibilities for labels to invest in new talents.
Neen, you are.
I just wanted to, well, that has already been said, but we certainly agree that payment should be the rule, but as when it's incorporated into a strategy, that might be different. If you're a strategy, then it's also a decision. And as long as it's a decision, that's a totally different point. Because I believe what Simon Kwame said is very right.
I'm thinking maybe we could actually try and turn around that around a little bit and say we're talking about devaluation, we're talking about choice, should we allow our music to be distributed for free? I'd like to ask, how necessary is free these days? If you're an up-and-coming band and you want to go out there, you want to put your music out, but you also want to make a living. But is it actually necessary, with the way things are right now, that you start off by putting it out there for free? If we take like a couple of minutes each on that, and then I think we should open for questions from the hall here. So, Eldar, if you would, how necessary is free, do you think?
I think it's very important, but it's, you know, of course, it should be on the terms of the artist or the record label to decide upon that. But as we know, free music is not new. You know, all of us in here and every record label, festival, music industry professional gets loads of free CDs every month. And, you know, prior to the internet, that was the only distribution of free music. It was being handed out as promotional copies to the radio stations and people who were working in the industry. And that was the old model. The new model after you know, Web 2.0 revolution, the internet, we or the radio stations or the music journalists, and, you know, they were not the channels that could control the market anymore. Now, you know, you cannot just send out free promo CDs and think things will happen automatically from that. So now music is being made free for normal music fans. And I think that, you know, we can discuss if that's a negative thing or a positive thing, but at least that's a fact, you know. Free music is not just distributed within the music industry. Free music is distributed from the artist directly to the music fan. And that one fan can then distribute it further and really promote that band or an artist. So I think free music is important. I think a new artist comes into the market and puts a price on every music he does from the very start. Could be a you know, a one threshold more. There are enough thresholds out there. Yeah, because, you know, it's being a new artist is, of course, it's a struggle, you know, and I think you could make it even harder for yourself if you decide not to give anything for free. But of course, that's a decision. You could even, that could also be, you know, a niche for that artist to hire some.
Martin's interest.
How necessary is free?
A necessity, yes, but even more so, it's a, we need, you know, we live in a reality where it's possible for people to get stuff for free anyhow, and I think that all of us will can understand at this point that we will never be able to control that. Anybody disagree? Anybody still in this room still agrees that we can control piracy? Great. So then we live in a reality where free will always be a possibility. So for me, in that reality, it's much better to take a seat in the driver's seat and to actually be able to manage how you use free as a tool. Because then you know who is downloading your songs, you can actually grow your fan base from that and so on. So for me, it would be great if everybody pays for music. But that would never work that, like that again. I'm sorry. And we need to take, you know, we need to kind of take a step from the reality, not from the past. And talking about, I would have to make one more point. Talking about value. Value is not equaling money in my world. And there's a value of art in the society level as well. And speaking of value and making money of your music, I think it's also important to think about how much money is it okay to make from music? And how much is it an art that is actually building society and where it's a great thing where art grows upon other art all the time, you know? So value is not equaling money.
There's another bold statement.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about taking the driver's seat in this evolution that is going on without end. Maybe your view of the driver's seat is different from some of the other panel members. Martin, how necessary is free, and are you looking at the same driver's seat that Martin Tempest is?
Well, it's definitely true that the music business as a whole is not in the driver's seat anymore, and it is a problem. Of course, there can be different wishes for. The degree on how you should control the distribution of music and the income. But I definitely believe that that there should be room for further development of models. One of the current models is that you can have all the music in the world, all you can eat, unlimited, for €10 for a month. I personally believe that that this kind of models need to be developed in the future, because this one size fits it all model do not necessarily protect the value of the different kind of music. One is that the model can be seen as devaluating the music. Music is not like water or like breathing the air. One of the problems is the fact that in these kind of models, labels and artists take out a pro rata share. It means that every download or every stream is paid the same. But different kind of music do not have the same value. And if you set the price, for instance, at €10, well, you would have some consumers that will pay €20 or €50, and you will give the music to them too cheap. And even though you set the price at €10 or €5, you will lose a large amount of consumers, because they're not willing to pay anything or very little. So it is not a very sophisticated tool, and it might be better to have, if you take jazz as an example, but it could also be other kind of music, it could be better to have a jazz service with a community where the musicians and the labels could connect with fans in new ways, and you can have an environment, and maybe you could have a payment for that on €20. because jazz fans tend to be better educated, they tend to be older, they tend to be more buying power, maybe. It could also be classical music or something else, and then you could achieve more by developing this kind of services.
A little unrest there in the audience. If we want to give time for Q&A, we need Hospice and Neil to give their idea of the necessity of free, and then jump on. So.
Okay.
Fairly brief.
Yeah. My experience from band base is actually that 90% of the bands are not that interested in making money out of the music. They're interested in getting the music spread around and getting feedback on the music and having fun playing it and sharing it. And that's a good thing, but that leaves the rest of the bands, the last 10% in a situation where they have to work within this framework where you put your music out for free. In that sense, you can say that there is a necessity, or you can say that they actually don't have a choice. That's just the way the world works at this moment. That being said, I think most of the 10% of these bands actually have an interest in putting at least a part of the music out for free, because free music is the best way to make the promotion that Marcin is talking about, and to get your music spread. So they definitely have an interest in it. And at the same time, I want to point out that music is not just about being the best at playing an instrument or making the best music. It's all about competing in promoting your music. And here, free music plays a part in that, as well as making a cool website and other stuff. So that's definitely a part of it as well.
Neil?
I think really much has been said already, so I don't have anything to add. I just wanted to make one comment to what you say about promotion, and you have to be out there for free in order to have your artist promoted. That's partly right. On the other hand, there's so much music out there, so you cannot just put your music out and now it's free and that solves everything, because you also have to get someone to listen to that particular music, so you have to build something around it in order to actually, my opinion or my experience, to actually being able to turn it into revenue streams on the other side. And then again, there are many ways to look at free. Is it free, or is it paid for by someone else? And I think that's a very important discussion to have. How do we deal with it? Because my artists cannot live from free all the time, so we have to deal it in one way or the other. And a solution like Martin is suggesting with various communities might not be uninteresting.
I just found myself looking at, does anybody know the English word for the Danish expression gungan og kapsalerne?
It's APU at the moment in the music business.
What?
APU.
APU.
It's average revenue per user.
Any questions? And please be brief so that we have time to get them answered and other questions asked. And please state your name and where you're from, where you represent.
I'm from Jens Lysted. I'm the vice president of the Danish Composers Organization, DJ BFA. I have one point and then a very low practical proposal. And the point is that when we speak to the music pirates, one of the important parameters for them not wanting to pay for music is that they don't want to pay 90% of what they're paying to multinational record companies. So they actually want to pay for, if they know that their money is going to the artist. That's a very important indicator or motivation for them to pay. So an Enolgo Kyoko is a fair share of their payments going to the artist. And I think that should be enough. That I think also multinational record companies should be alive, and they should be there and should have money for their work, but it should be, I think it's important to emphasize that as a parameter for the buyers. And another low practical point is when you go to the airport and somebody wants you to buy a perfume, you get a little bottle, like 1 milliliter, and then you can try it, and if you want it, you buy the whole bottle. So my suggestion, I want to ask Martin Jankovic, what would you say if you said streaming, every time you stream half of the song? Because, I mean, in 2 minutes you will have an idea if you like it or not.
Okay.
And if you like, you buy the whole song.
Yeah. Osmus and Latin, I think that was...
No, I just want to reply saying, can you get half of the smell in the perfume bottle? No, just meaning listening to half the song doesn't make sense as well as smelling half the perfume doesn't make sense.
No, it's not you have the, all the perfume is listed in the bottle.
Yeah.
But you do get the full smell.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you do that from, I mean, 2 minutes from a pop song, come on.
So you have a single version then.
The radio edit.
Yeah, why get a 2 minute version of it if you can get it for free anyway for 5 minutes? The full 5 minute version, you know.
Yeah, but I think as I say, I don't. The people who are actually listening to this are dedicated.
Yeah.
I don't think they're just wanting to for free. They're dedicated, and if they get dedicated, and you can push a button that for almost no money can give you the whole thing, I think they will do it.
Yeah. We believe at least on Kogoyoko, all the songs, all the albums, you can stream the whole album, all songs, and what we think, or we believe that you know you can. You can go somewhere else to get the full album or the full song. We try to, you know, let people listen to the whole music, not just a 2 minute sample, because, you know, we believe that people will, if they like it, they will buy it. And, you know, not everybody, but at least a portion of the people listening to it. And we like to keep people in a legal platform where they can support the musicians. When they buy the music, 100% of the profit goes to the artist or the right owners, which could be, of course, a record label. And I think we are very much looking backwards if we always think we can control it and think like, okay, maybe they would be happy with a 2 minute version. But the reason for people downloading the full version on Pirate Bay is that they like the full version. And some of them will eventually buy the track, some of them not. I think we cannot try to control it and say, we're not just going to give you a brief sample, half a smell or something like that.
Yeah, I'm Thomas from Romania, Luxembourg, Morocco. You talked about, Martin, about sitting in the driver's seat, but as I know, the most comfortable seat is at least in the limousine in the back. So let's presume the artist sits in the back and the chauffeur has to drive. And if we presume that the chauffeurs are platforms like MySpace, Bandbase, Kogoyoko, whatever, can you pay your chauffeur? So let's talk about the business model, all is for free. It's not new, you all have been working on your business model now at least for some years. You got international now refocusing on national, Kogoyoko is there I think as well for 2 or 3 years. Is this a business model that really has a future? Can we, as you or as the provider, really make a living out of it, being profitable?
Martin, I think that was for you. I think maybe the question is, who is in the driving seat and where is he taking us?
No, it's not. It's not more. Are these platforms, all these platforms? I mean, the business opportunities for MySpace are not that brilliant. Bandbase, are they doing? Are you doing profit, Kogoyoko? Are you doing profit? Is this something that really you say, hey, this is a business plan for the future, or I mean, are we just struggling around to get along?
Gentlemen?
I'll answer that. I don't think the fan base is ever going to be a big gold mine, and that's never been the intention with it. It's a music community for underground bands where everyone can have their music up for free if they like. But there are similar models like TZ Play and Spotify that actually works in similar ways as Kogoyoko and Bandbase, which you can say is more for the commercial part of the music. I think that's where you should be looking for the viable commercial working business model.
Martin, Ella, are you making money? Are you making a living?
Yeah, you know, I think these are business models for the future, definitely, but, you know, we're still in a landscape where, you know, nothing is certain. Both the artists and the music fans are looking for the solution. That's why we're here. We're still discussing downloading and streaming music on the internet. And we could have been here 2 years back and the situation would be very similar. But today we have at least platforms like Kogoyoko, like like Fund Foundation, which are working with artists, doing things legally. There's a lot of illegal services out there. Some of them are being closed, some of them are still running, and that's, we're always going to have piracy, but at least today we have platforms, artist-friendly platforms, that work with artists and try to do things legally. I definitely think that's the future, because music fans like to pay for the music, and we just have to make it really easy for them to do that, and we have to do it on the terms of the music fans. We cannot just tell them, say, well, look, you should continue to buy the CDs, or you should just not download any music for free, just buy it, you know. Things are not that simple. So I think that the future is definitely platforms like Okoyoko, like Fansfashion, which are working with artists and making it easy for people not only to access music and listen to it, but also to buy it. And when music is being distributed for free, Martin and the artist can have statistics on who's downloading it, where, you know, and they can use that statistic to decide upon where to tour, where to maybe try to, you know, market themselves and make revenue either from the music sales or in any other way. So yeah, this is definitely the solution, the answer.
Just a short comment, as Neil said, the artists are dependent on all the little streams of income, and I see Bandbase Gokyoko being a part of that.
And real brief, Martin?
And I totally agree, and all I can say is that most of all, an artist playing here 8:15 tonight, whoever it, he doesn't do anything else than record and play music nowadays, and that makes me really happy, because that's my job fulfilled. And so yes, it works. And something else I would like to say. But there's three words, which is better than free. I think it's really, Spotify for once has proven that it's possible to make a music server that is better than Pirate Bay, if anybody didn't thought that before, but it's always possible to do better, and in that environment make people to pay. And I also think it's important to understand that just because there's a new business model, it doesn't mean that that business model would be profitable from day one, or day two, or day three. It always takes time before those new models actually start working. And
okay.
That goes for MP3 streaming and what comes next.
We have 10 minutes left, and there are three people on the list here. I'm going to close the list now. You're up.
Yeah, I'm Anders George from redintent.com. We make small web shops online for MP3s, bands, and so on. That's cross-platform. I just want to make a comment to what Ellen Martin's saying. One of the things distributing on music online is, we talked about value before. I think we can flip that around and say the price for the consumer is not necessarily what that person pays. We can make it really, really easy for those people to buy it wherever they are. So they won't have to sit there, be aware of some new band somewhere, and then have to think, do I want to get it the legal way, or do I want to go and get it the illegal way? So make these things really, really available for people. But of course, be able to control it when it's out there and the revenue streams make their way back. I don't necessarily think that would devalue music, but the threshold or the barrier would just be much smaller. And then a question, we talked about the perfume early on. What about things like bit rates on music? Martin Gorms made a good point. One, it's not one size fits all. Some people want the low quality. Some people are willing to pay a whole lot more for a WAV file and so on. What's your take on that? Maybe making low qualities free and then making high qualities a premium product that people can pay more for.
So does anybody want to comment on that real brief? Or should we just let that?
Very short. For example, on Kogoyoko, the bitrate is much lower than when you buy the song. So that's one thing that we do. We offer everybody the chance to listen to the music, but the bitrate isn't that great.
I think that 99% of music consumers actually don't care that much about bitrate,
yeah,
to be honest.
I hadn't heard the word bitrate in like 5 years.
Okay, but then let's say to the point that you say you would rather have 100,000 people that are listening, and then 10,000 that are actually buying. If those 99, or that 1% there, and the 10,000 are actually the ones that want to pay a higher price, shouldn't they be able to do that, if that's how you're going to make your money?
But I don't want to release quality music in low quality. To me, that doesn't work. I'd much rather packaging in a good way to make that value higher of the product.
I think it's a good idea. I think there is a market for it, a niche market, and it's already available on services like Bandcamp, and I know Copenhagen Records also have a high bitrate quality store where you can buy it.
Question here?
Hi, I'm Christine, and I'm representing myself. I was just wondering, like, I'm listening as an, like, a consumer, I'm guessing, and well, I'm just listening, and it sounds like the music business, and I guess you might agree, like it's become more audience-driven instead of being business-driven. And this, for me, sounds like this is what you might still be fighting somehow, because, like, during the 90s and stuff, it was very, like, there were being made a lot of money on the music, so maybe now it's time to look at music for being art for the sake of art instead of being, like, art for money. I don't know. I know it's very, like, also a bold statement, but, like, I just want to put it out there and maybe, like, hear what you have to say about this.
Anybody on the panel want to comment on that? Art for art's sake, not for money's.
Well, art for art's sake is very good. I think a lot of people think that's excellent, but it just doesn't make a living, and you have to make a living in order to be there. You can't live from nothing.
Martin Gompton, do you have a view on that?
Yeah, I believe it is the same, and I think it is. There's a point that if for all engaged in the music business, both collecting societies, artists, labels, promoters, everyone should know for the business that they have to do with something that are not only business. And they should never forget that. And it is a very important point. Secondly, it will of course differ. One of the challenges for collecting societies is to engage for all the different kind of members, because members have very different priorities. They have different needs. They are a lot of people are not making music for money, and it's okay. And there should be rules and systems that can facilitate that for them. It is one of the reasons why we have implemented Creative Commons in our organization. But on the other hand, if you want to make a living from your music and want to have it as a job, then we should also support that. And it is very important, because in the long run, you cannot have creation on a professional level if you will not have income, at least for the majority of artists.
Last question over here.
I'm Hasse from the Swedish Arts Council. I have this question. Nowadays, everybody can be a record company, because we're recording this with my Macintosh, and I'm just a bureaucrat still doing some recordings. Someone told me that everybody can be a record company, but not everybody could be a promoter or a book shows, like we heard on the last panel. Said that there will be much more records out there all the time. Keith Harris from England told me the amount of records they put on into the equivalent to Coda in England are a greater and greater number of records that come to Coda. How will Coda have to change to adapt? We talk about how record companies have to adapt, but how does collecting societies have to adapt to this new situation?
Is there a direct question?
Yeah, we certainly have to adapt, and there have been really and a huge development for Coda in the last couple of years, because we have been much more focused on our role. We are taking our cultural role seriously. We are Last year we did distributed more than 200 million Danish kroner to Danish composers and writers, and 50 million kroner to cultural contributions together with the Songwriters Guilds. So we do a lot, and we want to have a lot of flexibility in our administration, so we are able to support the different need. We have also engaged in a process where we are much more focused on our customers and work together with them in partnerships. We have made a lot of projects together with customers to exploit new ways of cooperating. And there are, just to give you two examples where there's enormous potential for new kind of business. We have more than 20,000 shops and restaurants as customers, and a lot of people, they need new music there on the premises, and we could work together with them if we could make a kind of a new kind of cooperation and use it as a distribution channel. We should also take the radio stations more seriously. We are talking a lot about online, and it is true, online is very, very important, but today the average consumer in Denmark are listening to 2 hours of music from the radio every day, and it is a very, very important source, and we should actually do in the music business, both collecting societies, but also together with labels and the artist union, and an effort to get the radio business, the radio stations, to get them into the music business.
Yep. No.
Yes. There.
I think real brief, Ole, because we're out of time. Very brief, please.
You talk about the radio station. What about the television station? What about the visual music? Yes, music as MP3 is a second-hand product. What about the visual, the television station?
That's you again, Martin.
Well, the television station is also very, very important. And it plays an important role also to promote music. Last year they had one very remarkable thing, because for the first time all organizations within the music business, IFPI, CODA, the artist unions, the Songwriters Guilds, went together to and wrote a paper of wishes to the government and for the regulation of radio and TV. And one of the important points was exactly that there should be more Danish music in the television. And I'm quite sure that it also will be a part in the new agreement made in the parliament for the Denmark's radio.
Thank you. Thank you for listening and participating. Thank you for, as they say in the AA, thank you for sharing the viewpoints and sharing and the standpoints. Please continue this discussion. It's an important discussion, so don't forget it. Thank you. Have a nice day.